We've got rest of our time together, which is not as much as sometimes we have. I told Dan this past week, sometimes I'm my worst enemy in extending the invitation, that I take too long in the invitation, don't leave enough time for Soldiers of Christ. But that's okay. It's all Bible study, so it's all good. We are going through our Books of History card, which is the green card in your Soldiers of Christ field manual. If you do not have a set of these cards, if you're a visitor here tonight, Josiah, if you wouldn't mind, I've got about five or six sets of those. That if there's a visitor who wants to follow along with those tonight, just raise your hand and Josiah will give you a copy of that. We're on the green card, Soldiers of Christ, the Books of History card. It's where we are, and there's a prophet-level card, a priest-level card, and a king-level card. And by the way, all of these quizzes, we have quizzes on our website. I have no idea who's using them because I'm not looking on the back end of that of it to see who's using the quizzes. But on our website, if you go to the Bible study tab, drop down to Soldiers of Christ, there's a place that you can go online and just do it on your own. Just take these quizzes. See, it's most of them are multiple choice. Some of them are there's no, you know, hard. You can figure the answers out. But go in there, put your name in there so that it'll keep track of your quiz progress. And it's enjoyable. It'll give you a score at the end. You can go back and take it again and beat your score. If you get to the end and you've passed it, it'll give you a certificate and you can print it out and put that up on the refrigerator, and show it to your wife, show it to your husband, show it to your children and say, aha, I've got mine. Did you get yours yet? So go online, use those quizzes, and enjoy that. They're there for all of the cards that we have used so far. So we get to the book of 1 Samuel. Look on your prophet card. We get to the book of 1 Samuel. What is 1 Samuel about? All right, let me make it easier for you. There's three Bible characters that 1 Samuel is about. First one is, good job, Scott, Samuel. All right, two more. Saul and David. Okay, so 1 Samuel is about Samuel, Saul, and David. Those are your three major characters that you're going to read about in 1 Samuel. Now, in our Bibles, we've got 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel. What comes after that? 1 Kings, 2 Kings. That's not the way that it's always been. At one time, 1 and 2 Samuel were one book, and at one time, 1 and 2 Kings were one book. At one time, 1 Samuel was called the first book of Kings. 2 Samuel was called the second book of Kings. 1 Kings, our 1 Kings, was called the third book of Kings, and our 2 Kings was called the fourth book of Kings. That's not bad. It's not bad because who do you read about in 1 Samuel, the first book of Kings? The first king. Who do you read about in the 2 Samuel, the second book of Kings? Well, the second king, David. Who do you read about in 1 Kings, the third book of Kings? Solomon, the third king. Who do you read about in 2 Kings, the fourth book of the Kings? Not the fourth king. You read about that divided kingdom. And so in your Bibles, it may have that. It may give that information up at the top when you look at 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel. So anyway, we are coming after the period. This is the tail end of the period of the judges. How many judges were there? Okay, three of you knew that. That's outstanding, okay? So if we multiplied that by five, we would get the right answer to the question. So how many judges were there? Wow, there's two people knew at that time. We're going in the wrong direction here. Maybe math was too complicated. Okay, the answer is 15. All right, now, how many judges were there? 15. All right, so eight people knew at that time. All right, so this is not tricky. All right, so there's 15 judges. Who was the left-handed judge? Ehud. Who was the woman judge? Deborah. Who was the judge with an army of 300? Gideon. Who was the old judge? Eli. June knew that. The old judge was Eli. Who was the last judge? Samuel. That's on your prophet card. I think all of those are right there on your prophet card, aren't they? Talking about this judge and this judge and this judge. So the old judge is Eli. The last judge is Samuel. Who was Samuel's mother? Hannah. So Hannah is married. What's her husband's name? Elkanah. Good job. So Hannah and Elkanah went to Shiloh how often? Once a year. At least we know at least once a year. They're going up there yearly to worship God and to offer sacrifices there. But when they go up in 1 Samuel chapter 1, Hannah is sad. She is distressed. Why? She can't have children. By the way, what's the second reason, tied to the first reason, what's the second reason she's sad, distressed, and upset? Because of her... Is it verse 8 that calls her her rival? Verse 8 or 9? Verse 7, 8 or 9 calls Peninnah her rival. Can you imagine that? Well, if your husband's got two wives, what are you? You're rivals. Think about that. And her rival was continuously just belittling her and picking on her. And so that added to her stress level. So they go there and Hannah prays to God. This is on your priest card. On your priest card, what was the prayer of Samuel's mother? Two-part prayer. That she might have a son to give to God. Not just that she might have a son. It's on your priest card that she might have a son to give to God. Now, when she was praying this, what did old man Eli think she was... What did old man Eli think was going on? Because she's over there and she's fervently praying, but what is she doing? She's doing what you do sometimes. You're doing that. You ever do that? Don't answer that question. So she's mouthing the prayer, but nothing's coming out of her mouth. What does Eli think? Hello, lady. I know you're feeling bad, but whoa, you got to get off the drink. She drunk? No. She's just passionate about her prayer. When Eli finds out she's passionate about her prayer, instead of saying, okay, lady, you're drunk, what did Eli say to her instead? Okay, lady, God's going to answer your prayer. And so it's a down and about verse 19, 20, 21 that after the passing of time, they go home and they have a son. What does she name her son? Samuel. Why does she name him Samuel? What is the reason that she gives for naming him Samuel? This is in what verse? Verse 20 of chapter 1. Because she was heard by God. That's what the name means. I'm going to name him Samuel because I asked of God and I was heard by God. And so she kept Samuel with her until how long? At what point did she say, okay, now he can go and be dedicated to the Lord? Until he was weaned. How old is that? Well, it depends on who you ask. Do I want to know what you said, Sue? 26. That's when you get off my insurance. So, all right, Eli, he's not on my insurance anymore, so he's all yours. He's 26 years old. Depends on who you ask. The average answer on how old the child was when he was weaned was about 3 years old. Some would say older. Who is that, Jerry or Judy? One of you over here said 5 or 6. And that's sometimes a common answer. But the average answer is about 3 to 4 years old. Maybe as old as 5 or 6. Some put it down at a year old, but that's not likely in Samuel's case. For a number of reasons of what you read after this, but somewhere between 3 to 4 to 5 years old. You talk about dropping an 18-year-old off at college and driving away, crying your eyes out. What happens when you drop your 3 or 4 or 5-year-old? And of course, you're saying, well, it depends on which one. You know, there's certain of my kids that if they were 3 years old and I could drop them off and drive away, let's do it. Here was this boy, their son, that they had prayed to have, and they leave him there. Of course, did God bless them with more children? Yeah, more children. There's 3 more sons, 2 daughters that are added to this. And so they drop him off, and on your prophet card, who raised Samuel? Eli. Have you ever thought about what it must have been like to be Eli? How old was he? We don't know. That's the answer to that question. We don't know. How old was he when he died? 98. We know that one. He was 98 when he died. So back up and figure, how old was he when Samuel, we don't know. We don't know how much time passed from the time Samuel was dropped there until he died. But he's described as an old man. And you just got this little boy. Have you noticed that little boys have a lot of energy? Have you ever noticed that little boys have a lot of energy? And that before services, have you ever noticed? I wonder if Eli ever noticed that before services, they do the maze in and out of the pews, back and forth, back and forth. I don't know if Eli ever noticed that, But have you ever noticed that they do that? A lot of energy. And you get Eli, as Eli, you get Samuel to take care of him. Of course, Eli was very skilled. He was very successful in raising his own children, right? I mean, he did a bang-up job. He did an outstanding job in raising his own sons. So certainly, he could just kind of continue that on with Samuel, right? No? Okay, so this is on your king card. On your king card, what were the names of Eli's wicked sons? It's not any names of children here today, so we're not trying to call anybody out. Hophni and Phinehas. Hophni and Phinehas are described as Eli's wicked sons. What was so wicked? What was so wicked about them? They didn't pay attention. That's pretty wicked. Chapter 2, verse 12 says they were corrupt. They did not know the Lord. They were priests, right? So they're responsible when people bring their offerings to the Lord. They're responsible for taking those offerings before the Lord. But they would take whatever they wanted out of those offerings. Not what was coming to them as a priest, but they took whatever they wanted. And in chapter 2 says they would take the best out of those offerings to the point that it made the people despise the offerings. Think about that. People are bringing their offerings to the Lord and they're giving it to the priest to offer it to the Lord. And yet the people begin to despise worshiping God. They begin to despise offering to God. Why? Because of the sorry so-and-sos who were in charge of taking their sacrifices. Bad move. And so what else did these guys do? Not so good thing to do. They were laying with the women who were working at the tabernacle. So what was Eli's response to all of this? Was Eli okay with it? If you're still on your king card where it talks about Eli's wicked sons and their names are Hophni and Phinehas, also on your wicked card, on your king card is the sin of Eli in rearing his sons. He did not restrain them. In fact, I think it's also on your king card under key locations. Is this on your king card under key locations? That there's a key location. God judges parents who do not restrain their children. Did you know that? Well, chapter 3 and verse 13, God was going to judge Eli. Think about this. He was going to judge Eli not only for what he did, but for what he didn't do. He did not restrain his sons. And so Eli is a priest who was had sons who were priests. But Eli starts getting messages. The people tell Eli how bad his sons are. In chapter 2, the end of chapter 2, it says a man of God comes and tells Eli how bad his sons are. And he's the guy, the man of God is the first one who tells Eli, your family, you're not going to be priests anymore. Your lineage, done. I mean, that's how serious what his sons were doing. Your line, your lineage is no. God is going to take it and he's going to give it to another line, another lineage from Aaron, because you and your sons have not done that which is right. And so, back on your prophet card, what was heard by Samuel in the middle of the night? The voice of God. Did Samuel think it was the voice of God? No. In the middle of the night, and I think the Bible says sometime before the lamps were put out. So sometime right before dawn, Samuel hears, this little boy hears a voice that says, Samuel. So what did he do? He got up and ran into Eli's room. What did he say? Here I am. Can you picture a little boy doing that? Just busting in the door. Here I am. And he's like, Eli's like, hello. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning. It's not time to get up. Have you ever told your children, go back to bed? That's Eli. I didn't call you. Son, go back to bed. It's not even time to get up yet. Goes back to bed. Samuel. What's Samuel do? Here I am. You imagine being Eli? Boy, go back to bed. We're not doing this right now. Third time, Samuel. What does Samuel do? Bolts in. Here I am. Eli is starting to catch on now, right? Third time's the charm. Eli starts to catch on. And what does Eli realize? Okay, I didn't call him. This boy's hearing something. He's hearing the voice of God. So he tells Samuel what to do. Samuel goes back to bed. Fourth time. Samuel, Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 9. What is Samuel's response? Speak, Lord, for your servant hears. That's on your prophet card as an answer. It's on your priest card as a memory verse. Speak, Lord, for your servant hears. Is that a good memory verse to have? Is that an easy one for little kids to learn? Speak, Lord, for your servant hears. Do you think Samuel knew exactly what that meant when he said it? I don't know. Do you think he understood everything that was going to follow for the rest of his life based upon what he just said? I doubt he understood all of that. But he said, you know what, Lord? I'm ready. Speak, Lord. Whatever you've got to say, your servant hears. So what did the Lord tell Samuel? What was the message? This is what? On your priest card? God's message to young Samuel. What was God's message to young Samuel? What's going to happen to Eli's sons? They're going to be killed. Once you think about this, Eli already heard that message back in chapter 2. The man of God already told Eli that. But now God is giving that message to young boy Samuel. Did Samuel want to tell Eli the message? No way. Would you want to tell? I wouldn't want to tell Eli the message. And so he doesn't want to tell it, but Eli says, you tell me what the Lord said. And so Samuel spells it out for him. Can you imagine a little boy telling this old man what's going to happen to his sons? You remember what Eli's response was? What was Eli's response to this news that his sons were going to die? Chapter 3, I think it's verse 18. What was his response? Was it, curse God and die? Was that his response? No. His response in chapter 3 and verse 18 is, let God do what seems good to him. Let God take care of this. You think Eli realized that his sons deserved what was coming to him? He had heard this message over and over, but he did not restrain them. In fact, if you read chapter 2, and you read through chapter 2 where he actually goes to his sons, he tells his older sons, they're not little boys, he tells his older sons, guys, what you're doing is not good. Let's be honest, how effective is that as a parent? If your parents come to you and say, guys, what you're doing is not good, is that effective? You're like, no kidding, duh, that's why I'm doing it. You know, but so that's the extent of what he does. Guys, what you're doing is not good. Yeah, did not restrain them. Did not keep them from doing what they were doing. And so, did his sons end up dying? So, you get to chapter 4, and there's a battle there's a battle with the Philistines. And in the first part of this battle with the Philistines, 4,000 of the Jews are killed. And so, the Jews decide, hey, you know why we didn't win? Because we don't have the Ark of the Covenant with us. Get the Ark of the Covenant out here at the camp so that we can win in battle. And so when the Ark of the Covenant came to the camp of the Israelites, they just started cheering and yelling, and the Philistines heard that. What did the Philistines think? Oh, we're done. We're dead. You hear that? They're going to kill us. Next day, they're in battle. What happened? Not 4,000 Jews died. That was the day before. 30,000 Jews are killed next day in battle. Lose that battle. Not only lose 30,000 Jews, they lost the Ark of the Covenant. If you had to lose something, would you want it to be the Ark of the Covenant? Just wondering. God, just letting you know, we lost the Ark. How were they carrying it? Good question, Jerry. So they lost the Ark of the Covenant, but the Ark of the Covenant goes over to the Philistines' camp. What happened in the Philistines' camp when they had the Ark of the Covenant? Was it great things for them? No. Horrible things were happening to them, and they were having all sorts of issues and tumors that were coming upon them. They were being ravaged. I want you to see this. We'll close with this. 1 Samuel, what is this? Chapter 5, I think. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 5. We'll finish out with this. The Ark of the Covenant goes to the Philistines. And when the Philistines get it, they took the Ark of God, this 1 Samuel chapter 5, verse 1, brought it from Ebenezer to Ashdod. And when the Philistines took the Ark of God, they brought it into the house of Dagon and set it by Dagon. Dagon is a Philistine god. So you have this Philistine god, you have this idol, and Dagon was believed to be a fish body with a human, maybe a woman's head and hands, but a fish body. So they put it next to Dagon, this Philistine god, and so you have an idol, false god, and you have God. You have the Ark of the Covenant, the presence of God. So what happens in verse 3? When the people of Ashdod rose early in the morning to do whatever they needed to do to appease their god Dagon, there was Dagon fallen on its face to the earth before the Ark of the Lord. What happened? Was Dagon worshiping? I mean, why was this idol on its face before the Ark of the Covenant? So, well, what are you going to do if you worship idols? They took Dagon and set it back up in his place. Oh, we're sorry. Sorry, Dagon, what happened to you overnight? All right, let me wipe you off and clean you off. Okay, set you back up. Verse 4. When they arose early the next morning, there was Dagon. Where? Falling on his face again. But the head of Dagon and both the palms of its hands were broken off on the threshold. Only Dagon's torso, perhaps a fit like fish-like, was left of it. What's going on here? God's in control, not Dagon. So what did the Philistines decide to do? Get this thing out of here. Take it somewhere else. And so they started moving it around their country, saying, well, let's see, are we just having bad luck? Maybe Dagon just wasn't having a good day. Let's move it over here. Oh, nope, it's bad over there. Move it over here. Oh, no, it's bad over there. And so finally in chapter 6, the Philistines decide, you know what? After 7 months, would it take you 7 months to figure this out? After 7 months, give this thing back. So back to Jerry's question. How did they give it back? This is some verse in chapter 6. I see it in verse 7. I don't know if it's before verse 7. How did they give it back? How did they transport it? They put it on a cart. You know anybody else who put the Ark of the Covenant on a cart and had a bad day? Yeah, I knew a guy that did that. So here they put it on a cart, but they did get rid of this. Give it back. And so God's people got the Ark of the Covenant back. And there was great rejoicing getting the Ark of the Covenant back. In chapter 7, Samuel turns the people back to the Lord. I want you to imagine verse 3 of verse 7. Chapter 7, verse 3. Samuel spoke to all the house of Israel. This is when they got the Ark back. And they said, if you return to the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the foreign gods. What are they doing with foreign gods to begin with? That's their problem. Put away the foreign gods and the Ashtoreths from among you and prepare your hearts for the Lord and serve Him, what? Only. Get rid of these idols. And if you serve God only, He will deliver you from the Philistines. So the children of Israel put away the Baals and the Ashtoreths, and they served the Lord only. And during the next several years, they did not have any more problems with the Philistines. And so after being delivered from the Philistines, what did Samuel do in verse 12 of chapter 7? Samuel took a stone. This is when God had delivered them from the Philistines. He set it up between Mizpah and Shin, and he called the name of the stone what? Ebenezer. Why did he name the stone Ebenezer? Thus far the Lord has helped us. Do we sing a song? Here I raise my Ebenezer. Hither by thy, what? Help I've come. That's what Ebenezer means. God has helped us. Unfortunately, when we hear Ebenezer, our minds go somewhere else. In the Bible, Samuel said, we've been delivered from the Philistines and God has helped us. Last question. I skipped over this part. In the battle of the Philistines, when the Ark of the Covenant was taken, who died? At least, who do we know died? 30,000. But who died? Eli's sons. Eli's sons died in battle. And so a Benjamite runs back to Shiloh to tell the people what had happened, because they didn't have Facebook, they didn't have Instagram, they didn't have 24/7, you know, news media. They didn't have cell phones. So this guy hightails it back. I got to tell him what happened. And two things, he said, here's the message. Two things. The Ark of the Covenant's been taken, and Eli's sons have been killed. What card is this? This is on your king card. On your king card, Eli's reaction, and here's not the question. The question is not Eli's reaction to his sons dying. The Bible does not tell us what his reaction was to his sons dying. He knew that was coming. The question is, what was Eli's reaction to the Ark of the Covenant being captured? That was a bigger deal. The Ark of the Covenant being captured, bigger deal than his sons dying. Think about that. What does he do? Falls over backwards, breaks his neck, and dies. Not because he heard news about his sons, but because he realized that Israel was in trouble. Were they in trouble? Yeah. Big time in trouble. Next week, talk about the first king of Israel. Thank you all very much.